I'm going to call this meeting of the Preventive Health Policy Division to order. I'm Chair Mike Freiberg. This meeting is occurring pursuant to House Rule 10.01. The clerk will take attendance so we can establish a quorum.
Representative Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Grünhagen.
Present.
Representative Akin.
Present.
Representative Igbaje.
Present.
Representative Ackland. Representative Carlson.
Present.
Representative Franzen.
Present.
Representative Heinzman. Representative Morrison.
Present.
Representative Pryor.
Present.
Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of our February 3rd hearing. Vice Chair Bierman, would you like to move approval of the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move approval of the minutes from the last meeting, please.
Sure. Is there any discussion? Representative Ackland has raised her hand. Is that for just attendance purposes, Representative Ackland?
Yes, it is. Sorry.
Oh, no problem at all. I see a thumbs up from Ms. Somick, our legislative assistant, so you are considered present.
Thank you.
Yep. Seeing any discussion of the minutes? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, the minutes are approved. We have two bills on our agenda today. The first one we will discuss, they are both Representative Morrison bills. The first one we will discuss is House File 521, Medical Assistance Postpartum Coverage Extended. Just so members are aware, both bills have author's amendments. They are mostly technical. However, they were not posted within the 24-hour rule. So they are available for you to review on the committee website at this point. However, we will not be voting on them. But you're welcome to ask questions about them. They will likely be attached in a future committee hearing or potentially at a later stage in the legislative process. But, feel free to review them. And definitely do ask questions if you have any, because this would be a good committee, I think, for those to be discussed. So is there any questions about the process or anything at this point? Okay, Representative Morrison, would you like to move to re-refer House File 521 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that is my motion.
Okay, Representative Morrison has moved her bill. So, present your bill, Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. As a practicing OBGYN, I am so happy to bring you House File 521, which would extend Medicaid coverage for mothers to 12 months postpartum from the current federal mandate of 60 days. Postpartum maternal death rates are decreasing across the globe, but those rates are rising in the United States. In Minnesota, current law provides MA coverage for mothers for only 60 days postpartum. That follows the federal mandate that Congress established in 1986. We know much more about maternal morbidity and mortality and the delivery of postpartum care now, and we have a maternal mortality crisis. In the United States in 2018, our maternal mortality rate was 17.4 deaths per 100,000 live births, or 658 mothers. That is higher than most developed and high-income countries. And that does not include the toll of rising maternal morbidity, which reached 25,000 cases in 2017. Imagine the toll of those losses on children, families, and communities. According to data from DHS in 2020, about 10,000 women in Minnesota qualified for Medicaid based solely on their pregnancy, and nearly 40% of those mothers lost health coverage 60 days after giving birth. Because of our dire statistics, policymakers and healthcare providers from around the country have been working in a bipartisan fashion on addressing the maternal mortality crisis. a consistent recommendation and top priority of maternal mortality review committees across the country, including from Minnesota's own Maternal Mortality Review Committee, or the MMMRC, is to ensure continuous coverage for 12 months postpartum. Federal statute already covers a baby born to a mother on Medicaid through its first year of life, so this would align the mother with the infant's coverage. We know that healthy mothers lead to healthier babies. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has found that 1 in 3 pregnancy-related deaths occurred between 1 week and 1 full year after birth. This figure does not include deaths related to suicide or overdose, which are also leading causes in pregnancy-related deaths in a growing number of states. Overall, more than 52% of pregnancy-related deaths in the United States occur after delivery. We have new data that shows that clinical risk extends to the full year after the end of pregnancy. Specifically, women with substance use disorder are more likely to experience relapse and overdose 7 to 12 months postpartum. 1 in 7 women experience symptoms of postpartum depression in the year after giving birth. And cardiac disease, which is the leading cause of maternal mortality in the United States, according to CDC data, is especially prominent in the late postpartum period, up to 1 year after the end of pregnancy. Extending medical assistant coverage to 1 year postpartum is also a priority of the Minnesota House Select Committee on Racial Justice. In Minnesota, Black and American Indian women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die of pregnancy-related causes than their white counterparts. These statistics increase the urgency of ensuring that all people deserve access to healthcare in the year after giving birth, a critical and high-risk time in our lifespan. Extending MA coverage to a year postpartum will simplify postpartum coverage, address gaps in coverage, decrease administrative burden, and help ensure healthier outcomes for mothers, babies, and families. As a practicing OBGYN for almost 20 years, I have countless patient stories that inform my strong belief in the importance of this legislation. We can and we must do better for parents and children in Minnesota. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present House File 521 and for your consideration. Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Dr. Siri Feibiger, the legislative chair of the American College of OBGYN, Minnesota's section.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. I have I have Dr. Feibiger first and a few other people. So if everyone could please keep their testimony to 2 or 3 minutes, that would be appreciated. We do have another bill on the agenda. So welcome to the committee, Dr. Feibiger. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Siri Feibiger, and I'm the vice chair of the Minnesota section of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, representing nearly 1,000 providers of women's health care here in Minnesota. And we strongly support House File 521. Representative Morrison has clearly outlined the broad benefits of extended, reliable postpartum medical care. So let me emphasize the urgency. Access to health care can literally be the difference between life and death for a pregnant woman. In the United States, it is more dangerous to have a baby now than it was a generation ago. And this maternal mortality rate is rising in stark contrast to actually all other developed countries. We are the worst. The national maternal mortality rate is 24 per 100,000 births. Ours in Minnesota is 14 per 100,000, but that is still twice that of our Canadian neighbor. And at least half these deaths are postpartum, and 30% occurred later than 6 weeks postpartum, not counting those from suicide or overdose. And as Representative Morrison stated, for women of color or Indigenous women, that risk of death is 3 times that of white women, regardless of their education or socioeconomic status. And my patients know and tell me these numbers. Medicaid ensures that nearly half of our pregnant moms in Minnesota have high quality prenatal delivery and immediate postpartum care, which may contribute to our lower mortality rate than the national rate. However, more than 40% lose healthcare coverage after those 60 days when the qualifying income threshold greatly drops. It's also important to note that women of childbearing age are getting sicker and at younger ages for reasons that are not yet clear. The rates of hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, and mental health disorders are steadily increasing, regardless of risk factors. And so their pregnancies are more complicated, and quality postpartum care becomes critical during those next 12 months. And to repeat what Representative Morrison has just shared, it is important to note that the number one cause of late postpartum maternal mortality is heart disease. And these are in young women. 1 in 7 women do suffer from serious postpartum depression, and women with substance use disorder that relapse postpartum are more likely to do so in that 7 to 12 month postpartum period. Access to healthcare works, and it is vital for the personal well-being of Minnesota's mothers and that of their families in our community. Every woman, regardless of her insurer, employer, income, should have ready access to the right healthcare for her at the right time. Their lives are depending on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Fiebiger. I apologize for mispronouncing your name. I feel like I should have, I in particular should have gotten it correct given my last name. So thank you. Representative Grunhagen, I see you have your hand up. Did you want to wait until the testimony is concluded, or was this for us, Representative Morrison or Dr. Fiebiger?
No, I'll wait till the testimony is done.
Okay, you will be first on the list. Next on the list, I have Jessica Holm. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chair Freiberg, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Holm. I'm a midwife and the Nurse Midwife Division Director at Hennepin Healthcare and HCMC. At Hennepin Healthcare in Minneapolis, roughly 80% of the people who birth within our system are on medical assistance. So extending this coverage for a full 12 months postpartum would have a unique positive impact on our patient population. Midwives and other maternal healthcare providers see firsthand that mothers need more care in the first year after birth. It is known that 1/2 of the maternal deaths in this country occur after the birth of the baby. This is especially true for the Black, Indigenous, and people of color in our community who are currently living the grisly United States maternal mortality crisis. These individuals make up the majority of pregnant, birthing, and postpartum people we serve here at Hennepin Healthcare. Insurance that dissipates after only 60 days is insufficient to address potentially life-threatening health needs of these new mothers in terms of postpartum complications, as well as chronic conditions that could not be addressed during the pregnancy. These new mothers miss out on the opportunity to receive adequate mental health services. They may miss their window for receiving postpartum birth control. They may have need for surgery that could not safely be completed in pregnancy. Addressing any of these concerns listed has the ability to save lives, ensuring that families do not lose their mother to a preventable death. I serve on the Minnesota Maternal Mortality Review Committee, which is a mandated multidisciplinary team that reviews every maternal death in the state. In this context, the horrific statistics of maternal deaths in the first year postpartum have been illustrated for me by true stories of people who were unable to get needed care. Examples include lack of cardiac follow-up after birth, leading to death due to heart failure, as both Drs. Fiebiger and Morrison mentioned, or of so many mothers who miss out on mental health and substance use treatment and die in the first year postpartum due to overdose or suicide. I hope Minnesota joins the majority of states who extend Medicaid to 12 months postpartum for women who currently only qualify for this program based on pregnancy. Both mothers and babies should have a healthy start to life. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today about this critical issue.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, I noticed Representative Heintzman has joined us. So just for the record, if the LA could, Ms. Somick, if you could mark him as in attendance, that would be great. Next on the list, I have Jameg Karbia. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One second. I'm having a camera issue. All right. Thank you again, Mr. Chair. As stated, my camera's still not on. All right, as stated, my name is Jameg Karbia. I am a health equity researcher and doctoral candidate at the University of Minnesota's in the Health Services Research Program. As Dr. Fiebiger previously stated, there are abysmal inequities in maternal mortality that disproportionately impact Black, Indigenous, and other birthing people of color. We see Black women being 3 times more likely to die of pregnancy-related complications because of systemic inequity. However, today's discussion is not about these social failures towards birthing people. Instead, today we're discussing Medicaid coverage and how this can be used to support these extremely vulnerable individuals. We know that inequities we see are the result of disparate resource allocation rather than personal failings or biological ones, again, because race is a social, not a biological category. We've already heard that this coverage is important because one-third of pregnancy-related mortalities happen within 1 year following delivery. And it turns out that for a lot of birthing people in our country, they're even more vulnerable during this period because they have inconsistent access to health insurance. We know that not having insurance coverage keeps folks from seeking necessary preventative care, as Dr. Holm just stated. Preventative care that, as we know, can save these birthing people. We also know that expanding coverage past just the 30-day period to the current 60-day period is associated with a statistically significant reduction in the number of maternal deaths nationally. However, a recent study published in Health Affairs last year notes that looking at the National Medical Expenditure Panel survey showed that one in three birthing women experienced some kind of insurance gap. So that means in the year following delivery, either women had to change from one form of insurance coverage to another. And for many of them, this meant losing their primary source of insurance and not being able to receive additional insurance coverage in any way. We know from this data that due to other forms of structural inequity, that the individuals we see losing coverage or shopping for coverage during this period are more likely to be Black, Indigenous, and from other minoritized populations. And as previously stated, the maternal deaths that we see are due to chronic conditions, high blood pressure, substance abuse, and behavioral disorders that can't be treated entirely within 2 months of extended Medicaid coverage, but require the full 12-month period for individuals to get the care that they need. These conditions devastate communities of color and are often conditions that, when treated early, can minimize healthcare costs for the state in the future. Expanding coverage to 12 months postpartum offers all women, especially individuals of color, who have been historically and systematically under-resourced, an opportunity to seek the health services that could save their lives during the first year after giving birth to a child. But also, this coverage keeps moms alive, and it helps ensure that no other families have to deal with heart-wrenching pain that is raising an infant while also grieving the loss of their parent. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Carbia. Next on the list, I have Lily Melander. Welcome to the committee. I know who you are, but please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lily Melander, State Policy and Advocacy Director for Medical Ally Association. We are the cross-sector healthcare association in Minnesota that supports and advances Medical Ally's global leadership in health innovation and care. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of Representative Morrison's legislation extending medical assistance coverage for women for a year after giving birth. I'd also like to thank the other testifiers and those who have submitted letters for sharing the data and background on why this bill is so important. This legislation will ensure low-income women have continuous access to healthcare throughout the critical postpartum timeframe, which is essential to improving outcomes throughout the state. Over the past year, we've seen the pandemic profoundly change many aspects of life for the foreseeable future, but it's also shone a light on issues that have existed far before the pandemic hit, but were worsened by it, such as health inequities for underserved communities and people of color and indigenous communities. Medical Ally has always been at the forefront of healthcare transformation, and we support policies that leverage innovation in technology and care delivery that result in increased access, improved outcomes, and at lower costs for patients. Healthcare transformation requires a new focus and urgency aimed at eliminating health disparities. This legislation is one step in that direction through improving access to maternal and infant health. Given the significant and disproportionate health and economic impact for people of color, indigenous, and underserved communities. Every woman, regardless of their background or location, should have access to equal maternal health and care services. The Medical Ally Association strongly supports Representative Morrison's language to extend postpartum coverage for MA patients, and we look forward to working with her and other legislators to identify additional opportunities to leverage the insight and expertise of our members and bring their innovation forward to improve access to prenatal and postpartum care and address maternal and health inequities for people of color, indigenous, and underserved communities throughout Minnesota, both at a state and federal level. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Melander. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on this bill? You can raise your hand or speak up. Okay, I don't see any, so we will go to member questions. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Morrison, for bringing this bill forward. I noticed it's a you have a Republican co-author on the bill, so it's a bipartisan bill. My question has to do, you know, well, really, just want to say it's a key area for me of helping mothers with babies, and especially minorities. In my own observation of the areas I've been in, it's desperately needed. My question has to do with the finances. Are we going to get federal money to help cover the cost? We are faced with a pretty good size deficit. Of course, the February forecast isn't out yet. But how are the additional costs, and is there a fiscal note, or is there one being requested on this?
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. We are a policy committee, but I'll let Representative Morrison take that. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. This is, the bill directs DHS to submit the necessary waivers to get federal coverage. There's not a fiscal note prepared yet.
Okay. All right, thank you. No, thank you, Ms. Chair. Thank you, Representative Morrison.
Okay, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to thank Representative Morrison for bringing the bill forward. We heard this bill last year, I believe. I'm not sure why we didn't get it across the finish line last year, but I hope we will this time. This is, it's just incredibly stark to hear the numbers that you reported on, and just more than stark. I mean, it's shocking in this day and age. And this committee can do something about this. So I hope that all members will get behind this. So I just wanted to thank you for bringing the bill forward. I do have a question, though. It was mentioned in the intro that, you know, this isn't just Minnesota that's experiencing this. It's other states across the nation. And I just wondered if anybody, perhaps Dr. Freeberger or the author, knows what the results have been in states that have taken on these recommendations and moved with them and gone ahead to try to address this problem directly as prescribed.
Dr. Fiebiger?
Sure, I can address that. The reality is that the waiver has only been approved in Illinois and still waiting for the feds at the CMS level to act on it. So there is great work going on in DC to make that happen. The MACPAC recommendation that came out just this last month will go a long ways in helping Congress either help legislate that or get CMS off the mark. There have been a couple states who have extended Medicaid coverage specifically for mental health disorders or substance use disorder and have seen a positive impact in their numbers, but nobody has done this across the board like we're aspiring to. We can look at the increased access under the Affordable Care Act when we began covering infants for that 12 months postpartum, and perhaps extrapolate when we saw the infant mortality rate drop by 50%. And that's some of the projection that is getting support on the federal level.
Thank you, Dr.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bierman.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Fieberger, thank you for the comments. I think, Dr. Fieberger, you said it best in your testimony when you said access to health care works. And we as a committee, we need to remember that. That's why we're here. That's what we're talking about, is access to health care works. When people don't have access to health care, the circumstances become dire, the costs go up, and conditions deteriorate. So thank you for being here. Thanks for your testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I want to pick up where Representative Bierman left off by quoting one of our testifiers. To quote again what Ms. Kerba said, and I'm sorry if I just mispronounced your name, I didn't catch it that well. Keep moms alive. So many of us here are on the Early Childhood Committee or alumni of the Early Childhood Committee. And we talked a lot about, as you probably have heard about in other committees, adverse childhood experiences, which is ACEs. And we keep referring to those. I mean, I cannot imagine a more adverse experience than having your mother die within a year of your birth. So we know that this is important, not just for this generation of women that have given birth, but for the next generation. I really hope that this time we can get this one across the finish line and know that this kind of investment, not only in these people giving birth, but also into the next generation and what that means to them. I can't think of a more important investment that Minnesota can be making right now is this. So thank you, Dr. Morrison, Representative Morrison, for bringing this bill forward. And I guess, Mr. Chair, if I could redirect my question and make sure that I'm getting, connecting with our testifier that left that quote with us, if I got that right, and if there's anything that you'd want to add. And thank you for the research that you're doing.
Ms. Carbia?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Pryor. I think you do, that is the point, right? If we are concerned about health across the life course, we have to think about how the loss of your parent at the beginning of your life is a huge ACE and what it means for children who have to live without one parent because of maternal mortality. And as the chair stated, it is Carbia. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's covered. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Representative Morrison. I'm wondering how this legislation might be affected if the waiver isn't accepted at the federal level. The testifiers, I think, have done a really good job today walking through the need for this and the importance of trying to provide coverage beyond what we currently offer with programs available here in Minnesota. But I'm worried about not having a fiscal note and then what we might be looking at if we were to pass this legislation prior to actually getting that waiver approved. Does a bill author have any answers to that?
Representative Morrison, I know DHS staff is here too, if that would be helpful, but Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Heintzman. That's an important question. I would defer to their federal efforts at play too, and this is a priority of the Biden administration as well, but I would defer to DHS. And I think Tara Erickson is on the call as well, who could flesh that out in more detail.
Sure, Ms. Erickson, I see you just turned your camera on. Just please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tara Erickson, and I am the contract lobbyist for the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Thank you, Representative Heitzman, for your question. I just want to make sure that you know that without federal approval for this, it wouldn't be as though Minnesota would be stuck with the price tag when we get the fiscal note for this, because this is an 1115 waiver that we have to do. And since Medicaid is a 50-50 match, we would have to get the federal approval for that. There are some states who are looking at, obviously, passing this, and California actually did a couple of years ago, and they only use state dollars. And so somebody asked if we have any data, I think it was Representative Bierman that asked if we have data to show if this is working yet. The thing with it is that it was only a couple of years ago, and I think with everything that has happened with COVID that we don't have the best data at this time, but this is absolutely a bipartisan measure, and I made sure that the committee received a report from HHS, from the federal government, from the Trump administration just in December 2020, where they are looking at tackling this issue, and one of them was to not oppose states requesting to extend to 12 months postpartum. So this is definitely on a bipartisan measure, both at state and federal levels.
Representative Heintzman.
So I guess I will follow up then with just a repeat of the question. What happens if we pass this and we do not secure the waiver? So are you, maybe the testifier could address that, or the bill author, because I'm honestly not clear yet. It sounds like, yes, we could see those costs covered, but it may not be. So without a idea of what a fiscal note might show us, you know, it leaves us kind of blind here in this committee trying to figure that out. And I know this is the policy committee, so I apologize, Mr. Chair, but it's just obviously a question that, you know, we'd need to at least at some point have answered, right? So.
No problem. Yeah, and for the people at home, Representative Heintzman was kindly waving to my son, because I think they only show House information only shows the person speaking, in case you're wondering who he was waving to. So.
He's a handsome young man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So sorry, I got a little distracted with kids there. Is there somebody who would like to follow up, Ms. Erickson or our staff?
So again, Representative Heintzman, if we were not to get the approval of the federal waiver and Minnesota still wanted to extend Medicaid coverage to 12 months postpartum, it would be state-only dollars. I believe I have that correct. I'm assuming DHS, somebody from DHS might be on here. But again, if it was not approved, if the waiver was not approved and we decided as a state, or you guys did as lawmakers, it would then just be state-only money. State dollars.
Would somebody from DHS like to clarify this point? I see Ms. Bobst here. I think Ms. Savage is also on the call from DHS. Ms. Savage, I see you turned your camera on. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your comment.
Hi, I'm Gina Savage. I am healthcare eligibility policy analyst from DHS. I would like to confirm what Ms. Erickson just said. Currently, we do have a lot of our women who are on Medicaid continue to have a basis of Medicaid eligibility. So we could continue to bring down those federal dollars. But for anyone that we couldn't bring down those dollars without the waiver, that would be state funded.
Thank you. Representative Heintzman?
Sounds like we have questions coming down the road. We'll probably discuss that further at another point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no additional member questions, Representative Morrison, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this bill. This is such an important step toward addressing our maternal mortality and morbidity crisis in Minnesota. I urge your support, and I specifically want to thank Representative Albright for being the second author of this bill. And I thank Tara Erickson for pointing out the bipartisan nature of this effort. It's in all our interests for moms and babies in Minnesota to thrive. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. With that, Representative Morrison renews her motion that House File 521 be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Bierman.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Aiken.
Yes.
Representative Igbaje.
Yes.
Representative Ackland.
Yes.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Franzen.
Yes.
Representative Heintzman.
Yes.
Representative Morrison.
Yes.
Representative Pryor.
Yes.
With 11 ayes, the motion passes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Morrison, for your bill. Next on the agenda, we have House File 520. Representative Morrison, would you like to move to re-refer House File 520 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee?
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Morrison. Representative Morrison has moved the bill. And just to reiterate what I said at the first bill, there is an amendment to this bill as well. It is mostly a technical amendment, but it did not meet the 24-hour deadline. It is viewable on our website. We will not be adopting it because it did not meet the deadline, but it will likely be attached at a future date. So this would be a good opportunity to ask questions about it if anybody has any. So Representative Morrison, would you like to describe your bill?
Thank you, Chair Freiberg and members. I'm pleased to bring to the committee House File 520, a bill that will protect and expand access to contraception in Minnesota. Birth control is essential to the health and well-being of Minnesotans. Nearly 9 in 10 women of reproductive age will use birth control at some point in their lives. Many of them for reasons beyond planning a pregnancy, such as treating endometriosis or migraine. Birth control allows women to plan and space their pregnancies, reduces maternal mortality. And unlike most developed countries, the maternal mortality rate, as we just discussed in the United States, is increasing. And Black women are most at risk of dying during or from childbirth. According to a Johns Hopkins study, increasing contraceptive access is one of the most effective ways to reduce maternal mortality. To ensure that Minnesotans can plan their families and their futures by accessing the birth control method that is right for them, regardless of cost and free of unnecessary insurance barriers, House File 520 does two things. Number one, it puts the Affordable Care Act requirement that insurance plans cover FDA-approved categories of contraception at no out-of-pocket cost into our state law. And number two, it allows Minnesotans to receive up to a 12-month supply of birth control at a time covered by insurance. 16 states have already codified the ACA birth control rule into their state law and require their state-regulated health insurance plans to cover a full range of birth control at no cost. 20 states have enacted laws that allow patients to receive an extended supply of birth control at once. With the ACA again before the United States Supreme Court, now is the time to pass this bill and make sure that Minnesotans can retain this important health coverage. Birth control is basic preventive health care. Millions of Minnesotans, including thousands of your constituents, members of our families, and many of us in the room today, rely on birth control to plan and space our pregnancies, control underlying health conditions, attend college, progress in our jobs. I urge you to join me in supporting this common sense bill that will help protect and expand access to contraception in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. I have two people who have signed up. First, I have Dr. Maren Flynn.
Thank you, Representative Morrison and members of the committee.
Please proceed.
My name is Dr. Maren Flynn, and I am a member of the Minnesota section of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and our college strongly supports House File 520. I would like to share a story about a patient. A story that is common enough to respect her privacy and illustrates that this legislation guaranteeing accessible and affordable contraception translates to positive impacts for Minnesota women. This patient sought care in the emergency department for nausea and vomiting of early pregnancy that had escalated to the point of her needing IV fluids to stay hydrated. While helping to plan a strategy to mitigate her symptoms, I asked how she was feeling about being pregnant. She expressed her pregnancy was difficult and not planned. Then she showed me a picture of her adorable 6-month-old baby. This patient had multiple barriers interfering with her planning the right timing of her next pregnancy. It is well established that planned pregnancies result in healthier pregnancies. We know accessible and affordable contraception improves health, well-being, and leads to economic gains. Accessible and affordable contraception reduces unintended pregnancy, reduces abortion, and reduces maternal mortality. As spoken about in the last testimony, we do face an ongoing crisis of rising maternal mortality, and the Minnesota Department of Health reports that during 2011 to 2017, that is an unequal burden in which non-Hispanic Black women had a 2.3 times higher rate of maternal mortality when compared to white women, and Indigenous women 4 times higher. Our own maternal mortality review committee in Minnesota, after reviewing the 2017 cases, gave one of the following recommendations to help prevent maternal mortality: assess all women for family planning and education on contraception. House File 520 addresses this recommendation and guarantees access to contraception, education, and counseling. We are at a critical moment. The U.S. Supreme Court is deliberating a case about the Affordable Care Act that does have the potential to eliminate federal protection of access to contraception. This is a critical moment to pass state-level protections to ensure Minnesota health plans cover contraceptive services. With access to information, the right contraception, and the right timing of pregnancy, my patient, instead of showing pictures of her baby to the emergency department staff, could be home snuggling her baby. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Flynn. And I have one person who signed up for public testimony, Kia Whittier. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kia Whittier. I'm 25 years old, currently residing in Minneapolis, and a constituent in Minnesota House District 62B, represented by Aisha Gomez. And I'm testifying today in support of House File 520. After moving from St. Louis, Missouri to Minneapolis, I knew I needed to access birth control. As a young adult in college, I wanted to focus on my education and getting through university successfully. This meant taking one less potential worry away, getting pregnant. I made an appointment at Planned Parenthood and got set up with the birth control that was right for me at that time. I grew up in a single parent, low income household, so I feared that I'd be unable to afford any form of contraception, especially as a college student. But thankfully, my appointment didn't cost me a dime, which I am so incredibly thankful and grateful for. After some time, I began to notice some mild complications and ended up switching to the pill, which is something I still use today. So birth control has provided me with the protection my partner and I need, so we're in control of our lives and our futures as partners and as individuals. So the current law is that providers can only prescribe 3 months of birth control at a time rather than a full year's worth. In college, when I wasn't in class, studying, or doing homework, I was working. I was working a job that didn't allow for paid time off, which meant if I wanted to get my birth control pills, I'd have to make an appointment and lose out on pay every 3 months. Now, I'm employed full-time by an organization that provides paid time off, so accessing birth control isn't a current issue for me personally, but I know those within my community cannot say the same. I live in a working-class area where many of my neighbors and community members don't have the privilege of being able to take paid time off work. And if they do take that unpaid time off, that impacts their ability to be able to provide for themselves and or their families. By passing House File 520, you're showing working-class people that their time matters, that their lives matter. Increasing access from 3 months to 12 months ensures that people will be able to focus on the other parts of their lives for a longer period of time, thereby increasing access. As we know, and as it's been mentioned in this meeting already, access is a major issue in obtaining healthcare. So I implore you to pass House File 520 so we can ensure that Minnesotans across the state have the healthcare that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Whittier. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on this bill? Please raise your hand or speak up. Okay, seeing none, is there any member discussion? I don't have any hands raised at this point. I just saw a couple go up at the same time. Representative Heintzman.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morrison, just before I launch into a couple of questions, I just wanted to help people, myself specifically, understand a little bit. In your opening comments, I think I heard you say that birth control is a basic preventative health care need. Can you help me understand what that, in your mind, what that means? What are you saying?
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman. If I understand your question, contraception is basic to the well-being of people who are able to become pregnant. Without being able to control their reproduction, they are unable to control their lives. So it is an essential part of preventive health.
Thank you. Representative Heintzman, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of questions, and I guess I'm still drawing a little bit of a blank. You know, we hear about what preventative health care is in a lot of other contexts. I've never heard it used in this one. So that's why it caused me to want a clarification, and I'm not sure that I understand exactly what you're saying. But I do have some questions about how this would be rolled out. For example, if we had an individual that received a 12-month supply of a particular prescription and found, like, maybe, for example, the testifier actually mentioned that a change was needed, would this legislation then cover the cost for an additional prescription, and would that lead to increased costs in this subject area, or would there be language built into this bill that would prevent those kinds of things from occurring? How would that be handled?
Representative Morrison.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heintzman, if the patient and her provider deemed that a change was necessary, that would be covered.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that wasn't, maybe I ought to restate the question. I didn't hear an answer there, Representative. So the question is, if we had a prescription for a particular prescription was covered for 12 months, and then that changed, and you'd already had individuals that received that prescription, is there any language built into your bill that would prevent those increased costs from having those changes take place? You know, currently a 3-month supply, that's one thing, but if we're going 12 months, I'm just wondering if there's going to be any protection, any language in your bill that would prevent a sharp rising cost potentially in those kinds of scenarios.
Representative Morrison, I think you sort of answered it, but yeah. Do you
actually, she didn't, Mr. Chair, so that's why I'm asking again.
Okay. Representative Morrison.
And Representative Heintzman, I guess I thought I did too, but that would be at the discretion of the provider. And I think that would be probably a more unusual circumstance.
Okay. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think that just my point is there's a concern that I have, and just wanted to see if there's any language here. And it doesn't appear that there is any kind of language in this bill that would prevent increased costs due to changes in prescriptions. So, you know, that's okay. I just wanted a clarification. I think there's a number of other questions, so I'll hang on to mine to the end if there's more time.
Thank you, Representative Heintzman. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thank you, Representative Morrison. Yeah, I have a couple questions. I just have a summary here in front of me, but according to the summary, it covers, and just confirm this, contraceptive services covered under this bill is consultation, examination, procedures, and medical services related to the prevention of unintended pregnancy, voluntary sterilization procedures, patient education, counseling of contraceptives, and follow-up services related to the contraceptive methods or services, management of side effects, counseling for continued adherence, and device insertion or removal. So it's not just prescriptions. It looks like it's a whole host of other services. Am I understanding that correctly?
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Grunhagen. It covers FDA-approved methods of contraception.
Representative Grunhagen.
So, Representative Morrison, would that include the list I read then?
Representative Morrison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grunhagen, yes.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen?
Thank you, Representative Morrison. I have another question. Does this include coverage for a board of patients like Plan B, if I understand that, emergency contraception. My understanding is the supply requirement of 12 months is excluded, but the coverage for abortifacients are a coverage requirement. Representative Morrison?
Representative Morrison.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, this covers contraception, not abortion services. Contraception is not an abortifacient.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Representative Gruenhagen, or Mr. Chair. But there are prescriptions that you can take that cause abortion early on in the pregnancy. So are they covered?
Representative Morrison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gruenhagen, no.
Representative Gruenhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. The next question or comment I have, and you can respond. One of the things I've seen about mandates in general, but especially in healthcare, because I've sold health insurance for, since 1978, is that as soon as something is mandated, the price goes up exponentially. And then those who don't have insurance or access to insurance have a hard time affording that product because all of a sudden the producers figure out ways to increase the cost. And that's one of the strong hesitancies I have about this bill. Is there anything in the bill that would help people who don't have insurance pay for the prescription drugs that they need? And again, my concern is the price is going to go up 2, 3, 4 times over a period of time. And therefore, those who don't have access to insurance are not going to be able to access it at a reasonable price. Comments, Representative Morrison?
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Gruenhagen. The Department of Commerce has reviewed this and has determined that this does not represent a new mandate. And you make a great case for making sure that people are not uninsured in our state.
Representative Gruenhagen. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Obamacare has started to increase the uninsured rate again, just the opposite of what they promised. And I really, you claim it's not a mandate, but yet you're mandating without copays to the insurance companies. It seems like a contradiction to me. So I've got a number of concerns about this bill, but I'll let other people ask questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Eklund.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my Zoom just kind of went blank on me. I can't see you or myself, but I'll go ahead if you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay, thank you. Circling back on Representative Heintzman's concern about giving the 12-month supply, and to address Ms. Whittier's problem that she ran into, it seemed to me that really the standard that I've seen in my practice has been that the prescriptions were written for 3 months at a time and with 3 additional refills. So that would that scenario would prevent a 12-month supply being given all at once, which might be wasted. At least it would only be a 3-month at a time. And to Ms. Whittier's problem, pharmacies would be open late or on evenings or on weekends. And so I just wondered why that scenario wouldn't be a better option for the bill rather than 12 months at once. And that was just my first question, if somebody wants to address that first.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Eklund. The idea is to make sure that make it easy for people to have continuous access and coverage their contraception, which improves health and decreases the rate of unintended pregnancy.
Representative Eklund.
Okay, thank you. And I just wanted to clarify, Representative Gruenhagen was touched on this a little bit, but when you say contraceptive services, I know some women do use abortion as a means of contraception. And I just want to make sure if that's very clear that abortions are not covered under this, and maybe that's covered under a different law or something I'm not aware of. So I just wanted make sure that I'm clear on that.
Any clarification, Representative Morrison?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackland, this has nothing to do with abortion other than decreasing the rates of abortion.
Okay,
I'm just looking at the bill as well. The definition of contraceptive is on 2.9, and it seems to be pretty clearly things intended to prevent unintended pregnancy and has no language related to abortion. Representative Ackland.
Thank you for your clarification. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks? Oh, Representative Grunhagen?
Oh, thank you, Ms. Chair. Yeah, just one other area on abortion. I guess I'd like to see an amendment on the bill clearly stating that no abortion services or any prescriptions dealing with abortifacients are covered under this plan, just to clarify. Because I can see lawsuits being filed, some judge reading between the lines, and the next thing you know, it's covered. And so if Representative Moore would entertain an amendment in the future on this, I think it'd be a little bit more palatable in that area. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. We've had no such amendments submitted to the committee, so as Representative Morrison can consider it as this bill moves forward, I'm sure. Any additional member discussion? Okay, any closing remarks, Representative Morrison?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members, and thank you to the testifiers on both bills. I'm very grateful for their presence here today. And I urge support of this important measure to protect access to contraception in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. And I guess I'll just, you know, I think this does cover an important service, and, you know, I'm glad to support this bill. It seems like it follows a pretty standard process, you know, as far as covering contraceptive for 12 months, if there does happen to be a change, as you said, Dr. Morrison, it would be pretty unusual. But I think if it's done in consultation with the doctor, then it should definitely be covered. So thank you. With that, Ms. Somick, could you please take the roll?
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Bierman.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Representative Akam.
Yes.
Representative Egbaje.
Yes.
Representative Ackland.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Franzen.
No.
Representative Heinzman.
No.
Representative Morrison.
Yes.
Representative Pryor.
Yes.
With 7 ayes and 4 nays, the motion prevails.
Okay. The bill has been referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. So thank you, Representative Morrison, for presenting your bills. And looks like, members, you will get about half an hour of your day back. We've ended a little bit early, so appreciate the good discussion. And I, unless members have any questions, looking to see if there are any. Okay, seeing none, we are adjourned. So thank you, members.